Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Both of my daughters studied piano, at least for a little while. My oldest hated it. She lasted about a year or so and then quit, and I was gutted because she had a great touch, you know? Even early on, she could make a lovely legato sound, which is sometimes the hardest thing to learn. My younger daughter liked the piano, mainly because she loved her teacher, who was great. But then her teacher suddenly became famous. In fact, she was on our show night before last. That's Simona Dinnerstein. And then she couldn't teach anymore. So my daughter tried someone else, but then quickly decided it just wasn't the same. Plus, soccer was taking up more of her time, and you parents out there know where I'm going with all this. We have a piano sitting at home that no one plays. Now, lots of people have instruments cluttering up their homes that no one plays anymore. And for those of you who have something smaller and more portable than a piano, we have a potential solution for you, which I'll explain in a second. Of course, some folks do put their instruments to great use. The band Dum Dum Girls will bring their blend of dreamy pop harmonies and jangly indie rock to our studio for a live performance. And we'll hear from choreographer Stephen Petronio and the experimental hip-hop artist Clams Casino about their new collaboration, It Is Not What You Would Expect. But back to the island of misfit instruments. Our colleagues at our classical sister station WQXR had a brilliant idea. Do an instrument drive. Collect all those unwanted trumpets and clarinets and violins and give them to a public school kid who's itching to play. Jeff Spurgeon is on-air host at WQXR. Jeff, welcome back to Soundcheck.
Thanks, John. Good to be here.
So for folks who haven't heard the details, how does this instrument drive work?
It's very simple. You have an old instrument sitting around in the closet or maybe in a storage space, and you bring it to one of 14 locations. We have spots in all five boroughs, in Westchester, on Long Island, and in New Jersey. And you drop it off. We'll have you fill out a tiny bit of paperwork so you can get a tax deduction and make it an official donation. And that is it. The instruments will be repaired and then distributed to schools in New York City who have to qualify for the program. So they have a little work to do to the schools.
Okay. And for information, you can go to WQXR.org/kids to find out the locations and all
everything.
That kind of
all the information is right there.
Do they have to be like band instruments or classical instruments? Can you donate a banjo? Or
yeah, we'll take. They're not taking for some reason recorders, and they want things you can carry in your hand. So you know, I have an extra Steinway. It's just clogging up the hallway. Sorry, can't hand carry that.
Okay, let's take some calls and see what some of our listeners are thinking about donating to the WQXR Instrument Drive. We'll start with Lee here in Manhattan. Hi, Lee.
Hello.
So what are you going to be donating to the Instrument Drive?
I donated an old electric guitar that I found.
You found it? Where?
At Central Park. When I was in high school, we used to have to do service learning. And so I went to the park to help clean up. And one day I found this old electric guitar and I asked the guy in charge if I could have it. And he said, sure.
You found a guitar in the park. Did it work?
I don't know. I never actually got around to learning how to play it.
So you took it home, and where has it been? First of all, how long have you had it?
This was in 10th grade. I'm now in my last year of college, so it's been a while.
Okay. And so where has it been?
Sitting in my room.
Just sitting around. What do you play?
I don't. I'm a writer. I'm not really a musician.
Okay. But so there was this moment perhaps where you thought, hey, I'll take this home, learn how to play, I'll be a rock star.
Basically.
So that's been donated to the cause then?
Yep.
All right, Lee, well done. That was, it took a few years, but you found a good home for your orphaned electric guitar.
Indeed.
Thanks, Lee.
Thank you. Have a nice day.
You too. Jeff, what about you? Are you a candidate for the instrument drives?
You know what? I have kept the trombone that I played in high school and a little bit in college. I've kept it for 35 years. And so I actually brought it up on the day that we kicked this thing off on Friday last. I brought it up to the Rubenstein Atrium near Lincoln Center and parted company with it. Yeah.
When's the last time you actually played it?
It was about 3 years ago. Some friends of mine have a family band, and one of the kids in the family played the trumpet. And the mom said, you know, Jeff, I know you played the trombone. You should come over and play it. We'll do a piece with you and with our daughter. So I brought it over and tried to play it. It's the only time in the history of my marriage, 20 years, that I've seen my wife collapse with laughter, literally onto the floor. That was how bad it was.
And that was when you decided, we need to have an instrument drive so that I have an excuse to get rid of this thing.
Get rid of this horrible shame that lingers in my life.
Jeff Spurgeon's on-air host at our classical sister station, WQXR, which is running the instrument drive through April 7th. For more information, including locations to drop the instruments off, go to wqxr.org/kids. Let's hear from Hal, who's calling in from Brooklyn. Hey, Hal.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. So what's your donation to the instrument drive?
I'm donating Roland EM15 keyboard. I took that last night, cleaned it off. It's been sitting over in a corner of my bedroom, forlorn and unplayed for a number of years. But I hooked it up, and it sounds fine. So I'm going to be bringing that over some night this week.
So it's an electric keyboard. So, Jeff, you were saying before, no pianos, has to be something you can hand carry.
We are taking these electronic keyboards. A lot of people have some very nice ones that they aren't using, and we appreciate the fact that Hal called Kathleen, who's running the drive, and checked it out with her. But, yeah, it's great.
So, Hal, are you a musician? Do you play?
Yes, I do. I've always loved music. It's always been a really important part of my life. When I was in third grade, I started playing piano, or started trying to play piano. I was going to a Catholic school, and one of the nuns was giving piano lessons. So I started taking piano lessons, but unfortunately, we didn't have a piano at home for me to practice on. So I eventually had to give up the lessons.
So why did you get the keyboard in the first place?
Well, it was a present, and my now former wife gave it to me as a present about 10 or 12 years ago for Christmas. And unfortunately, I mean, I really loved it, and I started trying to learn how to play it, but unfortunately, I mean, I'm a financial news editor, and I freelance on top of that, so I hardly have time to play the instruments I already know how to play.
Right.
And so it's been sitting over in the corner of my bedroom, looking very sad. And, you know, like I said, I barely had time to play the instruments that I do know how to play, let alone the 2 hours or 3 hours a day it would take to learn one from scratch. Even though I desperately would, I would love to play piano. I really would. I mean, I fantasize it in the next life I'll come back as a concert pianist. So,
well, it's a good thing that you're doing, Hal, donating this electronic keyboard to the WQXR instrument drive. Thanks very much for the call.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
So, you know, as we've gone through this process, Jeff, and spoken to some of your listeners and our listeners,
yeah.
You know, there are lots of people who tried and maybe for a while succeeded in playing an instrument and then for one reason or another gave it up or just couldn't master it and it sat in the closet. But we've also noticed a number of people who were not themselves the owners of these instruments but who, you know, are doing these donations after a loved one has passed away.
Amazing the memories and the weight, the personal weight that we put on these instruments. I mean, I felt that with the stupid high school trombone I had, but I took it out. It's like I have lots of memories of lots of things I did with that instrument. And if it's a family heirloom or seems to be a family heirloom, that's a hard thing to let go of. You feel like you're abandoning the family.
Well, now, it's funny you should say that because our next caller is Deborah L. Jacobs, senior editor at Forbes Media, who usually writes about personal finances for baby boomers. But on her blog recently, she wrote about the experience of donating her family's violin to the WQXR instrument drive. Apparently, it belonged to her grandfather. And she wrote, "For nearly 50 years, the tradition has consisted of this. Child breaks violin, grown-up repairs it, and preserves it for the next generation."
No mention of anybody playing it in there.
Well, Deborah joins us on the line here at Soundcheck. Hi, Deborah.
Hi.
So,
good to be here.
So how old is this violin?
The violin has been in our family for 50 years, as you noted, and I think it's probably older than that. It's a reproduction, and I don't know how old precisely it is, but it's been repaired many times because it was probably honored in the breaking more than it was honored in making harmony.
So it originally belonged to your grandfather. Was he a good player? Was he a musician?
Grandpa Oscar was a terrible player, and although I remember it belonging to him, in the course of checking in with all of his descendants to get their approval to donate it, I learned that my memory was not exactly correct. It was more poetic to think that it had belonged to him, but in fact, he had acquired it from a friend of his who was a music teacher. He did play the violin, and he owned a violin, but he quote-unquote learned to play it later in life. So this was not exactly his childhood violin.
Hmm. So was it, you talk about you had to check with all the various relatives before making this donation. Was there anybody who thought, oh, man, it's been in the family for 50 years. He can't give this away.
Well, it's interesting.
Or are they all happy to see the back of it after breaking it?
Thing is that I'm the author of a book called Estate Planning Smarts, which is about building a legacy and passing items along to the next generation. So in my work, I write all the time about families that fight about objects that are completely worthless, but that have sentimental value. The irony about this object was that it's relatively worthless, and it didn't have any sentimental value either.
I love the idea of the combination of, you know, a not very valuable instrument and very little sentimental value.
So no wonder you keep it around.
Here you go, public school kids. Have at it. So Deborah L. Jacobs, senior editor at Forbes Media, and making this donation of the family violin to the WQXR Instrument Drive. Well done, Deborah. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
And Jeff Spurgeon, on-air host at our classical sister station, WQXR. I suppose, I mean, we've already collected lots of instruments.
Hundreds, but we have not reached our goal of 1,000 yet. And if we happen to exceed it, that'll be a wonderful thing, too. But
so it's through April 7th.
Yeah, through all donations are accepted all the way through Monday, April 7th. Whenever the place that you're taking it to donate is open, you can drop it off then. Whenever the drop-off place is open, that's when you can drop off an instrument.
And again, all those details are on the web at wqxr.org/kids. And it seems like every instrument being donated has a story behind it. Listeners, tell us the story behind the instrument that you're donating to the WQXR Drive. Post it at soundcheck.org or leave us your story in a voicemail at 866-939-1612.
And what's so beautiful about this is that when you give the instrument away, it becomes itself again. It becomes a musical instrument.
Mm-hmm.
You get to keep the story forever. But the instrument gets to be an instrument again.
And it gets to be played.
Yeah.
Instead of sitting in a closet somewhere.
Yep.
Again, our number 866-939-1612. Tell us the story behind the instrument you're donating to the WQXR Instrument Drive or post your story at soundcheck.org. Jeff Spurgeon, great to have you back.
Thanks, John.
This is Soundcheck.
Lonely guitar, just serenading your song to
up next, Dum Dum Girls is the New York band led by Dee Dee Penny. They'll play live in our studio. And later, two unique collaborations. Hip-hop producer Clams Casino shares music from his score for a dance piece choreographed by Stephen Petronio. And we'll hear the indie duo Buke and Gace performing a new piece alongside the ensemble So Percussion. That's coming up on Soundcheck.
You got it.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. The band Dum Dum Girls began as a vehicle for singer and songwriter Dee Dee Penny's creations. Over the course of three full-length records and several EPs, the Dum Dum Girls, now a band, have stripped back and polished their early fuzzed-out sound. Their latest record is called Too True, and the band is here to play some of those songs for us in the studio today. Dum Dum Girls are going to start us off with a live version of Are You Okay? Here in the Soundcheck studio. That's Dum Dum Girls, live on Soundcheck with the song Are You Okay?, which you'll find on their latest album called Too True. Let me introduce you to the Dum Dum Girls, Dee Dee on vocals and guitar, Jules on guitar and backing vocals, Malia on bass and backing vocals, Sandy behind our drum kit, more backing vocals, and a Dum Dum boy joining the band, Andrew on guitar. Dee Dee, to you and the rest of the Dum Dum Girls, welcome to Soundcheck.
Thank you.
So I have to assume you know the song Dum Dum Boys by Iggy Pop.
Yes.
Was that kind of the inspiration for the name of this band?
Partly, yeah. It was sort of a combination of that and the Vaseline's record, Dum Dum, unintentionally the Talk Talk song, Dum Dum Girls.
All right.
A whole host of things.
Mm-hmm. Now, this song you just played for us, Are You Okay? You told the Boston Globe last week that this was a song you were sort of prepared to give this to Ronnie Spector to sing, right?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't like a done deal or anything, mm-hmm. but I had her in mind when I was writing it because we had met a while ago and talked about maybe doing some stuff together.
Uh-huh. Have you done that before, written songs for other people to sing?
Not really. It's a new interest of mine.
Uh-huh.
But it definitely informed the chorus of the song. You know, I imagined her doing her classic sort of hiccup, you know, eh-eh.
That then it is. It does have a kind of classic '60s sound to it. The vocals on this record are much more front and center than they have been in the past. Was that in the songwriting process, or was that something that happened in the making of the record?
I mean, that's always a production decision. I've been moving toward that since probably the second release on Sub Pop. I Will Be was definitely, you know, the vocal mix was much, much lower. But after that record, when I started working in actual studios with Richard Goddard and my engineer, Alonzo, you know, they've been slowly coaxing me.
Now, talking about that classic 60s sound, you know, you're working with Richard Goddard, who wrote I Want Candy,
yeah,
and My Boyfriend's Back, and a whole host
all
of...
All sorts.
Yeah. So that kind of DNA is it in the material when you write it, or does that happen in the studio with
I definitely have always looked towards sort of the 60s era of songwriting as my model, I would say. I felt like such, you know, simple, streamlined pop songs came out of that time.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was learning to write songs, I was learning to play a lot of those songs, which made writing my own stuff accessible. You know, like, oh, okay, I can see how this song, which is an amazing song, breaks down into three chords, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that was inspiring. And, yeah, we definitely speak the same language, I think.
Yeah. So there's the 60s thing. There's also a kind of jangly 80s guitar-y sound to a lot of this new record, especially.
Definitely.
I know you're a Smiths fan. You covered There Is a Light That Never Goes Out at one point.
Yes.
Have you read the Morrissey autobiography yet?
I've started it.
You've started it?
Yeah.
How far in are you?
I'm about a third of the way, I'd say.
Okay.
It's on my floor in my bedroom.
our executive producer, Joel Meyer, put together this Morrissey book club where he was going to get staff and our listeners to read along with him.
That's awesome.
And I think a lot of people stayed with him for the first third of the book, and then they started dropping like flies.
Oh, no. I feel like it's getting better.
Okay. Well, what's your favorite part so far?
Well, I have always appreciated his outspokenness towards animal rights. So I've unintentionally gone back to being vegan since starting the book.
Wow.
So
that seems like a hard thing to do unintentionally.
Well, I've been vegan in the past, and I've, you know, run the whole gamut of the diet thing, but I just couldn't keep reading it and not. It sunk in again,
yeah.
So.
Okay. Meat is murder, as they famously said on one of their records. Now, so you write the songs. At what point do they become band things? I mean, do they begin as Girl with a Guitar in a Bedroom?
I've always written pretty much that way. This record, I wrote all the songs at one point, you know, like in a condensed situation. Usually I kind of write them over a period of time. And this time around, I also wrote them and recorded them electric instead of, you know, on my acoustic guitar, which is how I normally do things. Everything was just a little more accelerated for this one. And then we get together and rehearse and then go on tour. So it kind of has two forms, you know. It's like a recorded thing, and then we run it through the live filter.
So you road test them before you actually make the final version.
Yeah, I get to go to L.A. for like a vacation because they all live in L.A. And
you're here in New York.
There, yeah.
Right. We're speaking with Dee Dee and the Dum Dum Girls here in the Soundcheck studio. The newest album from the band is Too True. It's out now. This is one of my favorite songs off the record, In the Wake of You. You want to do that for us next?
We'd love to.
All right. It's Dum Dum Girls, live on Soundcheck.
Days, she's at home, day in, day out.
More live music from Dum Dum Girls here in the Soundcheck studio. In the Wake of You is from their latest album called Too True. But that's a live version the band played for us here on Soundcheck today. This next song actually goes back to an earlier record, the 2011 collection called Only in Dreams. Here's Dum Dum Girls with Coming Down.
Where to start? 'Cause I feel
That's lovely. Dum Dum Girls, live on Soundcheck with Coming Down, which is not off the new record, Too True. It's from 2011's Only in Dreams. Dee Dee, we were talking before about, you know, sort of the sound of the band progressing from album to album. What happens to these songs when you go back 3 years and a couple of records? And do the songs change then?
Yeah, they typically do. Everything kind of starts to move forward. It's fun to play songs off the first record, sort of with the coloring that we're doing the new songs in, although there can be quite a discrepancy between the initial energy of a song. But something like Coming Down, we used to do all the time, and we stopped doing it because I was having so much vocal difficulty, and so we just started doing it again, and at least for me, it feels really great.
By vocal difficulty, you mean like nodes on the
vocal
cords?
Yeah, I had just kind of thrashed my voice and had to take a lot of time off. So this song in particular was a nightmare. so it feels really special that we can play it again.
That's great.
Yeah.
So now that you are back in business, you clearly do mean business because there's another record coming out, right? Your husband is the lead singer of Crocodiles.
Yes.
And the two of you are finally doing a record together.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of funny to be in the whirlwind of this tour and then be reminded, oh, right, that single came out yesterday.
Oh, that.
yeah, that's something we've been meaning to do forever. Obviously, we both play music, and it'd be strange if we avoided collaborating any longer at this point. But it was nice. We were able to write the record during said off time, and it's a cool thing to have, you know, in 20 years, assuming we don't hate each other, you know, we'll have this cute little time capsule of when we were young.
And the name is Haunted Hearts?
Yeah.
And that's due out on May 27th. The album will be called Initiation. But in the meantime, we have Too True, the latest from Dum Dum Girls, who are touring around, playing for us here in the Soundcheck studio today. And Dee Dee to you, and again, the rest of the Dum Dum Girls, this has been fun. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having us.
The void in my head, the hole in my heart, I feel them with things which all fall apart. I enlist the gods and all of the
Still to come, New York choreographer Steven Petronio has teamed up with hip-hop producer Clams Casino on a new dance piece, and we'll hear some of the surprising music from it. And later, hear the ensemble So Percussion performing a new song with the indie duo of Buke and Gace. That's later on Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. This song by the band Orchestral Maneuvers in the Dark inspired a young dancer named Steven Petronio to break out of the box in 1982. And I mean that literally. He cut himself out of a box during the piece, but figuratively as well. Petronio formed his own company shortly thereafter and has been pushing the boundaries of dance and dance theater ever since. He's celebrating his 30th anniversary season with several premieres, including one with music composed by Clams Casino, the hip-hop experimentalist who also happens to be Stephen's cousin, Michael Volpe. Both of them join us here in the Soundcheck studio. Stephen, welcome back.
So nice to be here, as always, John.
Mike, good to have you here as well.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So, you know, it occurs to me, Stephen, reading through your just-released memoir, Confessions of a Motion Addict, that there's been a kind of progression, a sonic progression in your pieces. The first couple were silent. Mm-hmm. Then there was, like, found music, the songs that you would hear, like OMD. Mm-hmm. And now on to commissioned music written specifically for you. Has the company, has the dance progressed along similar lines?
Well, you know, when you are using something that already exists, you're kind of a slave to it. And it becomes much more than a map. It becomes what you have to confront. And that could be pleasurable. But for me, the idea of commissioning a work from someone that I respect and love, whose music moves me, is what it's all about. I mean, it's about the conversation that we're having in the present moment, and that makes contemporary dance for me. So, yeah, I think it certainly shifts how I make things. It's much more messy and fun along mm-hmm. the way.
Now, Mike, you know, you've done dance music, you know, remixing Lana Del Rey and Florence mm-hmm. and the Machine and working with ASAP Rocky. Have you ever done this kind of dance music?
No, this is the first time.
So how did this happen? You just, Stephen called up and said, write me a piece?
Yeah, well, we had kind of talked about it for a little bit, like, oh, eventually, yeah, let's do something, you know, maybe next year or sometime, whenever the time was right. And Stephen had mentioned it to me, and I was like, yeah, I'm down whenever to do it.
And the 30th anniversary seemed
to be
the time.
Yeah, and so that seemed like the, you know, appropriate time to do it, so.
The Stephen Petronio Company's 30th anniversary season is running from April 8th through the 13th at the Joyce Theater and will include the world premiere of Locomotor with music by Clams Casino. Let's hear a little bit of that music. Just a little bit of the music from Locomotor, a world premiere piece that gets its first performances at the Joyce Theater as part of the Stephen Petronio Company's 30th anniversary season. Written for Stephen Petronio by Clams Casino, the hip-hop experimentalist, who is also Mike Volpe, Stephen's cousin. Mike, it's a very pensive-sounding piece, you know, but full of these kind of sonic interventions as well. Did you talk to Stephen at all about what the sound world would be before you started creating this?
Not in that before I really had made anything. I had some ideas, but his kind of direction was just like in the way of sending notes and emails of kind of things that he had been reading at the time and where he wanted to go dance-wise. Not so much as like actual, a little bit, but not as much like actual sound or and sound direction stuff, but just kind of how he was going about working out how the dance would kind of come together.
So interesting. What, you know, I began to send Michael notes about hurling forward in space and then conversely hurling backward in, through space. You know, when I'm framing the dance with the idea of movement through space, it occurred, I read some theory somewhere that forward propulsion promotes future creation and backwards propulsion promotes reminiscence, nostalgic reminiscence. So, so there was kind of a time, a forward and backward thing that we began to discuss.
So literally moving yourself backwards will prompt some nostalgia kind of thing?
That is the idea. So what I've done in the dance is all the stuff that's new is the result of forward propulsion, and all the stuff that goes backwards through space, and there's the dancers honestly are very heroic about the way they're moving backwards, will drop them off into some ruminations about past memories and past interests. But, you know, interestingly enough, Michael, I thought Michael would really blast it out, but he took the memory feeling and a much more quiet tack to it, which I love, and totally surprising to me.
We're speaking with Stephen Petronio, who founded the Stephen Petronio Company 30 years ago, and Clams Casino, a.k.a. Michael Volpe, the hip-hop experimentalist and producer, and... Stephen's new book is called Confessions of a Motion Addict, and in it you talk about music going all the way back to Elvis Presley as a little kid, you know, being a fan of Elvis. You come to New York in the late 70s, you're on the downtown scene, late 70s, early 80s, a real kind of artistic ferment. How did you respond to music in those days, and has that changed over 30 years?
You know, I think for me... My entire artistic process is intuitive, so I respond from my gut. You know, and from the very beginning, I began working with popular music, and then I met a great New York composer, experimentalist David Linton, a percussionist, and you know, I began to call him, and we did many, many works together. For me, I'm not classically trained, and I respond from my gut to what I hear and what I see, and I know it within a few bars if I'm going to be able to make movement to something, and it's just very quick for me.
So. Mm-hmm. You also have in the book some fairly cheeky things to say about people like Paul Taylor and Mark Morris, and how they use music. So when you use music, are you looking for the unexpected? Are you looking, as you said before, skiing off the slope and maybe coming back?
I think a good artistic experience is one that has that helps the audience realize that there's some mind working through this, but that no one knows where it's going. And for me, I really love surprises. So that's what I try to capture on stage, the sense of the unknown, the experimental, the twisted expectation.
Now, in addition to premiering the piece Locomotor with Michael here, you're also premiering Stripped, which is set to the Philip Glass Etude No. 5. So this is one of those within a couple of bars you knew this was something you wanted?
Oh, yeah. It's, you know, I knew I wanted to use an etude because the idea was to, you know, I've been wanting to work with Philip for a very long time and with his music, and I think I'm old enough to do it now. And so the etudes are like little studies and where he was trying to get better at something, and he was just doing what he does. And so with number five, I've done these solos over the course of my career. They're kind of character, male characters, and kind of like a little sad clownish guy that comes out in these character in these solos. So it's a tender and a little sad etude, and so I thought it would be perfect for me.
So this is a solo for you?
It's for me, yeah.
Okay. Let's hear a little bit of the Philip Glass Etude number five. Bit of the Etude No. 5 for piano by Philip Glass, which is the music that Stephen Petronio has used for his new piece called Stripped, a solo piece that gets its premiere as part of the Stephen Petronio Company's 30th anniversary season at the Joyce Theater, April 8th through the 13th here in New York. Stephen Petronio with me on soundcheck, along with Clams Casino, the musician and producer who did the score for Locomotor, also getting its premiere. Mike, have you seen a lot of Stephen's work over the years?
Yes, since I think the first memory I have of going to one of his shows, I must have been about seven. I think I was about seven
wow.
or eight or something. I went with a big group of our family, so yeah. I didn't go to like every year, but every once in a while, every couple of years, I would go. And
Have you read his memoir? Have you
not
read
yet? I have a copy of it, but I haven't read it yet.
I told him to wait until after the show, so he doesn't get too
or until
too tainted.
Yeah, I mean,
until after he grows up.
Oh, that's what I was going to say. Like, is he old enough to read this thing?
Yeah,
he is.
Some pretty R-rated stuff here. Some borderline illegal stuff in here. So, Stephen, one of the things in the book is very early on, you're at Hampshire College and someone tells you, because you got a late start in dance, right?
I went to Hampshire College to study medicine.
So, and this person, I think her name is Lisa something, says to you, hey, you can try and play catch up and learn all the techniques and never be as good as the people who grew up with them, or you can set out on your own path and find your own techniques.
Yeah, that was Lisa Nelson, a collaborator of the great Steve Paxton. And Lisa's a wonderful mind. She's the good cop to Steve's bad cop. And so she laid down the gauntlet and she said, you know, you can go this way or that way. And to a young man trying to figure out where his way in dance, it was a little scarier to choose not going the traditional path. But,
yeah.
But you know, I started doing improvisation with Steve Paxton and at Hampshire, and that's where I really came alive, and that's where the buttons were all switched on. So I decided to try to develop a language of my own.
So it's very instinctive, intuitive.
Yeah.
But over the course of 30 years, does it become a kind of language, a kind of received tradition of
its own?
It
very much is a language. The Petronio language is, you know, it's 30 years old. And I fought very hard to codify it and to be able to communicate it and pass it to people. Of course, once that happens, then the question is, now what? And so how do you keep fresh and changing? And so Michael's inspiration is to help me keep changing and evolving. So
it's this kind of surprising score for Locomotor,
yeah.
Because you would expect something propulsive for on the floor. And Mike, what you get is something, as we said before, kind of subdued and slower.
Mm-hmm.
People use the term cloud rap for you know, this kind of slower form of music. You've done work with Lil B, who's associated with that style. Now, Stephen's talking about making up a new language of dance. Is that what you guys are doing, is creating sort of a new language of hip-hop, of production?
Yeah, I think so. Over the past couple of years, it seems like that, and not something that I had kind of really thought about. I mean, I guess I always thought about being separated and doing my own thing, and I never wanted to sound like other things.
Well, the piece Locomotor gets its world premiere as part of the Stephen Petronio Company's 30th anniversary season. Again, the date's April 8th through 13th at the Joyce Theater. Also, the premiere of Stripped to the Philip Glass music, Strange Attractors, an older piece with music from Michael Nyman. And the book is out now, called Confessions of a Motion Addict, Stephen Petronio and Clams Casino. Guys, thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Locomotor, music by Clams Casino with dance by Stephen Petronio. So that's one way of collaborating. But last week at Merkin Concert Hall here in New York, we unveiled another way of collaborating. It was part of my annual New Sounds Live concert series there in collaboration with the Ecstatic Music Festival. And the on-stage collaboration was between Buick and Gace, the indie duo who often design and build their own instruments, and the quartet known as So Percussion. They got together, they each did a set of their own material, and then they premiered a set of collaborative songs. Here's one called Hold It. This is Buick and Gace with So Percussion.
Get you to hold it. Yeah.
That is a live performance from our New Sounds Live concert at Merkin Hall last week in New York. Buick and Gase, that's Aaron Dyer singing and Aaron Sanchez, both of them playing different sorts of instruments that they've designed and built themselves, and the quartet known as So Percussion, a new song called Hold It, and you just heard the world premiere performance from the stage of Merkin Hall. Tomorrow on Soundcheck, our Vanished Venues series returns with a look at the Roseland Ballroom, the Midtown nightclub that will close its doors and vanish come Monday, following a send-off from Lady Gaga. We'll hear about the history of Roseland, which first opened in New York City back in 1919. Plus, an in-studio visit from one of my favorite guests, John Doe. He co-founded the seminal L.A. punk band X, then launched a solo career steeped in Americana and his unmistakable voice. He'll join us to play live. That does it for the show today. I'm John Schaefer. This is Soundcheck.